welcome into another edition of the Dogcast. I'm Matt Wood, your somewhat host, and we're going to do a lot of different things today. We're trying to find our footing still. Remember, if you have any ideas, let us know in the comments of what you want to hear. Today, we're going to talk to John Stichcomb. You may know him as, you know, Simmons, Sims, John at DBN. He may be James Bond, I don't know. But he has many different names, but you're going to hear his voice today. We're going to talk about the Bengals and the Browns, what we saw, what we liked, what we didn't like. Also, we're going to talk to Mike Spanier, NFL referee. He's a line judge, trust me. If you don't know the name, you've seen the guy work before. He's worked on crews with Ed Hockley. I mean, big-time referee here. Has a lot of good insight on what it goes into being an NFL referee. And finally, we're going to talk to Buffalo Rumblings. That's right, the Buffalo Bills SBN site. And they're going to give us an insight of what they plan on doing this weekend. And maybe they have an explanation why every single Browns-Bills game is god-awful to watch. Well, let's go ahead and get it kick-started. Up first, John Stichcomb from Dogs by Nature. What's going on, man?
Not much.
Yeah. Looking back at last week's game against the Bengals, it's kind of, you know, it's a loss just like the Eagles games, but, man, it's two different ball games.
Yeah, like polar opposites. That's how I led my piece, my week two reflections, just polar opposite games. But we needed to see, like, the improvement from Trent Richardson. I mean, you draft him number three overall, and I know most of the Dogs by Nature readers are not a fan of, like, drafting running back that high, but if you do it, you've got to see him be a threat every time he touches the ball. He's got to be someone who can take it in the end zone. And that's what we saw last week. It's not what we saw in week one.
You obviously know me. I hated the pick. Didn't want yeah. Richardson and all that. But I tell you what, I jumped up off my couch on that screen pass, and it's fun to have that dynamic player on your offense.
Yeah, and excitement. Something to get fans excited is something we haven't had here since, like, 2007. And it feels good again, even though we lost. And I don't believe in the moral victories, but it does create some excitement coming into these games. And it's not something we saw in week one.
Yeah.
Brandon Whedon, same boat.
Exactly. That's
week one from week two.
That's what I was about to touch on here. Going back to McCoy, I would have just been happy if he would have thrown the ball down the field. I didn't care if it got intercepted. I just want to see him throw the ball down the field. So that's why after week one, I wasn't all that broken up, because he took his shots down the field. This week, he mixed in with his shots down the field with checking down and being safe with the football, and that it could be a potent combination with Richardson out of the backfield.
Right. Throwing all over the field, stepping into the pocket, something we didn't see last week. And I was just all around impressed from Whedon. No interceptions was huge.
Yeah, and you know what? The other thing, our offensive line played a whole lot better. Now, granted, they're not facing the Eagles every week, which, got to give them credit. I think they're the best defensive line in football. But Schwartz stepped up well, got some recognition from a couple of websites and stuff like that. Joe Thomas just doesn't look the same, though. And, you know,
no.
That's,
I mean,
the scary part.
God forbid we even mention it, but it's something you can't – he's built such a reputation for himself, you can't ignore that issue.
And maybe that's part of it, the fact that, you know, we expect him to be unbelievable, and if he gets beaten for a sack, everyone kind of looks around like, what the hell's going on?
Right.
So what other takes did you take away from the football game? Anything on the defensive secondary without being Hayden and Sheldon Brown other than one play?
Just completely torn apart. I mean, it's one thing to get beaten by A.J. Green. You know, he's going to beat teams. He's going to get you. But we're making their second guy, two guys, fourth guy, like, look like world beaters. And that's unacceptable. We got to step it up in the secondary. And I know Hayden's out for three more games. Hopefully Brown can come back, but that was just, you can't have that.
And, you know, and that's the thing. The Andrew Hawkins, I think, is a fantastic football player, the one who had the jitterbug touchdown running all over the place. The Bins touchdown was a kind of a disappointment, but he was matched up one-on-one with Haig down the sideline. You'd like to think that we could maybe find another matchup on that one, but, hey, give credit to Cincinnati for finding that matchup. And I think some people are being a little too hard on the secondary. You're asking a lot of people to play a little bit higher up on the competition level than you should. You know, I watched the Jets get torched by the Steelers, who were without Revis, and they still had Cromartie. But you're right. I mean, screens tackling was really bad, but, you know, hey, it's a cornerback. Yeah. It's kind of what they do. But what other aspects you got for us?
I was still impressed with the front seven.
Yep.
They held the law firm, as they call them, Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, in check, and DeQuell Jackson just playing out of his mind. He, three sacks, another pick. Just amazing season for him thus far.
And if he doesn't go to the Pro Bowl this year, I mean, and if he stays healthy, which has always been his downfall, there definitely needs to be some sort of investigation, because it obviously just proves that the Pro Bowl is a complete sham. I mean, I think we already kind of know what that is anyways. But
yeah, I don't really put much into Pro Bowls. I've had a history of that, but that's why I always say all pro, but he's on his way, I think.
He's making the impact plays, and when he signed that big contract, I was one of the detractors, said, look, he's not a special linebacker. It's not a good decision to do this, but he has stepped up, made those impact plays in the sacks and in the
Absolutely.
Interceptions, and that's what's taken him to the next level, and it's exciting to see, because you know what? All of a sudden, we don't have to have Fujita and, you know, A.J. Fort and all the other linebackers be as good if he can be that dynamic player. Because, I mean, let's be real. Who the hell plays around, you know, Ray Lewis right now? I don't know, you know, but it doesn't matter because it's still Ray freaking Lewis in the middle. Got anything for us on the offensive side of the ball outside of Whedon and Richardson?
Mo Mass, of course, stepping up as the number one guy. I think we're all surprised with him. I would like to see a little bit more from Benjamin. I don't know where we can play him other than those reverses, but I want to see more. And, of course, Josh Gordon's got to step up a little bit more, pick him in the second round. He's still a rookie, though. Greg Little still has a case of the drops, but that touchdown pass was right on the money.
And what a sweet throw that was. I mean, that just was one of those throws where I kind of inched up in my seat, and I was like, that's what I'm looking for. I mean, he stepped up in the pocket, threw a rope right there on the deep post. I loved it. And, you know, Greg Little got to do it. Did you see that little back and forth Little had with, I guess, some followers on Twitter this week?
Yeah, that was interesting. I don't know. I, of course, am a fan of, like, just having our players just keep quiet, just keep the positive stuff out there. But you can only hope for so much.
If you're one of the fans who are calling him out for doing a touchdown dance, you know, smack yourself in the face with a hammer, because what do you want him to do? You know?
Right.
Let's be happy he didn't punt the ball. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah.
Let's have a little bit of priorities here.
It's a little cliche, but winning cures everything. So, I mean, if we come out with a W, no one complaining.
Yeah, and, you know, I go back to the Josh Gordon point you had. I don't want to say I'm disappointed, I mean, because it's obviously 2 weeks, but I thought maybe he would have a little bit of bigger role, especially, you know, in the preseason where he made that insane catch over Asamoah. You see these flashes of this kid being just a beast matchup-wise. And then on Sundays, it's almost like they kind of, I don't know if they forget about him or if he's just not getting open, but that was definitely disappointing if I had to say one thing was disappointing on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I would agree. It was a pick I liked when we made it, but second round's pretty high.
Yeah. But my whole point was, would anyone been pissed if we would have taken a wide receiver next year with the second round pick? I mean.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know.
And now we've got him now, so.
Right. So
and
hopefully.
This is a must-win season for this front office, so.
Now, let me ask you about that. If you had to guess right now, is Hecker Shermer in charge next year? Because I don't think there's any chance that Holmgren's back next year. But do you think there's a chance that Shermer and Hecker are back next year?
Right now, I would have to say no. I want to see them back, even though, I mean, I'm one of Shermer's biggest critics. But I think this team would benefit from some consistency. I mean, they're young. If they can stay in the same offense and the same defense the whole way through, I think that would really benefit and, like, build for the long term. But I don't think Haslam's going to put up with winning. And I can't blame Haslam for that. I mean, put up with losing. And I can't blame Haslam for that. So,
see, but the thing is, you know, he came in preaching about consistency and continuity and all this. And you're just like, well, you know, you got to give it a chance. But, you know, if I paid $1 billion for something and I didn't really love what was going on, I'd probably poop can
right.
people, too.
And I actually think this is a team, a young base that – if they were going to make a change, they have to do it now, not a year from now, not 2 years from now, just so they can have at least whoever the second guy is can work with this young team and build with them so we have something for the long term. So not another reset button as
yeah.
it has been in the past.
I can live with firing Shermer. I really could. I think he's a decent head coach. I don't think he's a great guy, worst guy, whatever. But the guy that I really would like to keep is Hecker, and I think he's just made such a difference on this roster. I mean, you look from bottom to top. Look at the defensive line, like you mentioned earlier. I mean, we were getting pressure with John Hughes, you know, the defensive rookie. Billy Winn was fantastic for us in week one, you know, a rookie. You know, Parker, a guy we signed off the scrap heap, was getting pressure in both games.
Yep.
You know, and you
totally agree.
And Frosty Rucker, who has just been solid against the run, and he had huge shoes to fill for Jamie Mitchell, who's in the Hall of Fame, You know, and then you're able to move him inside on passing downs. You look at this and you're like, well, what the hell? This is the guy who brought in all this talent. And this is the thing I like to point out. Every offseason, he's put his focus on one area. His first offseason, it was the secondary. I think all Browns fans would agree that that's a strength. Even, you know, what we saw last week, he still has to like that depth a little bit. Then he kind of turned his attention to the defensive line. Well, that looks like it's paying off in spades. And then you look over at the offensive line, that's kind of taken fruition, at least, you know, obviously, small sample alert, 1 week. You know, that looks good, and we're getting some playmakers. If you give this guy two more years, all of a sudden we're kind of filled up, and all of a sudden we're starting this over, and he's drafting, you know, defensive backs again. And it's this is how good football teams are made.
One thing that worries me is with Holmgren's exit, will they clean house completely? And I would like, if they are to replace Shurmur, I would love to see him keep Hecker if that was possible.
Yeah.
But of course, they would have to be drafting for his offense, so it would likely be still a West Coast system, something like that. But
the one good aspect of that, though, Whedon seems, and you know, I'm not Rufio by any means, it seems that Whedon has the arm to kind of play in any sort of system. If we switch to some sort of vertical offense, I think Whedon would be right at home in that as well. So it's frustrating to me to be talking about this part. You know, it just really is.
Yeah, I would. You know, everybody wants to just have something consistent. So other than consistently losing, which is what we've seen thus far.
We got that part down pat. Now let me ask you a little bit of personal stuff here before we get into fantasy. Who is your number one rival when it comes to the teams? Who's number one on your list?
Steelers, hands down.
All right, because there's a couple Ravens holdouts out there. I believe Dorn.
My dad, for one, he completely hates the Ravens. He gave up on the NFL the day Art Modell moved the team. He was done with the league, and he'll still put Browns games on. He'll still clap and all this, but a little bit of him died inside the day that they moved, and he refuses to even acknowledge their existence. Illegitimate team, he tells me every time. And he doesn't hold a double standard. He feels the same way about the Colts. He said, those are the Baltimore Colts playing in Indianapolis. So he was the one who brought me up on football. So it's hard to watch. And now we go to high school games every Friday, and that's sort of our thing. But I can't, I can understand why people hate the Ravens more than the Steelers. But while I hate the Steelers, I have respect for them. I don't have respect for the Ravens, knowing how they came into existence. As a Browns fan, I can't have to hate the Steelers more for rivalry reasons.
It's interesting you say that, because my dad's the same way. He hates the Ravens more than the Steelers. And it goes back to the Steelers voted against the Browns move, which, hey, you know, I hate the Steelers more than anybody, but that was a top-class move. Way to go. All aboard.
Right.
But, nah, it's something about the Steelers that just does it to me.
Right.
I root for against them in every single game. It'll be interesting when we do a podcast here with the Steelers. You know, I know it's towards the end of the year, but I don't even know if they'll talk to me. That behind the steel curtain, that place hates me. But we'll see. Hopefully they will talk to me.
I should have voted for the Meteor.
Exactly. Fantasy, you are the fantasy guru. I mean, some guys are starting their season off 0-2, 2-0, whatever.
Yeah, I'm one of those 0-2s, actually.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, had a bad start, but I always say waiver wire is where it's won and lost. So, you know, a lot of the DBN leagues, the waiver wire is extremely fierce. So,
yeah,
be quick on that kind of stuff. So I know this is going to come out later on, but these are guys you want to look at with maybe a league that doesn't have people paying as much attention, like family and friend league, stuff like that. But first off is Danny Amendola. I like him. I think he's finally sort of coming into his role with the Rams. But 21 points last week, 7 before that. He's getting all the targets from Bradford. He's a guy I would he's a must pick up in any league. Maybe a little deeper pickup, something like Donnie Avery, taking the pressure off of Wayne for the Colts, Luck. That's a guy you can probably get in still some leagues. Not, of course, the DBN, at least not the unofficial DBN fan league. So all those guys are taken immediately as soon as the waiver wire checks. So.
We're smart people. What do you expect?
Exactly. Brandon LaFell is another wide receiver. Sort of take the number two guy for another young quarterback in Cam Newton, taking the pressure off of Steve Smith. Somebody you might want to look at, a tight end, actually, Martellus Bennett. This guy is actually getting all the red zone targets for the like tight ends in this league, for the New York Giants. I mean, he's another guy who's flying off the shelves. Someone you might want to look at, maybe at least like for a play this week. Andre Brown came out of nowhere for the New York Giants. I'll take a look at him.
Let me ask you another question here.
Go ahead.
What kind of people would you be looking for to maybe buy low? Some guys that have gotten off to a slow start, and you know maybe their owners are 0-2, and they're looking to you know say, all right, the hell with Chris Johnson or something like that. Who are some guys that maybe you would target?
Chris Johnson is one of them. I don't know. I'm a Chris Johnson owner in my money league, and I got him really cheap in the draft. But I've tried to trade him already. No one wants him, so it's interesting. If you can get him for someone that like is you never expect to play, but like the Chris Johnson owner is desperate for a wide receiver. I mean, he might be worth a bench spot if you have that kind of guy to give up and you can make a deal work.
I tell you, a guy that I would dump. Alfred Morris, the running back in Washington, I watched him because I have him in my money league. Holy smokes, is that guy slow. I mean, we're talking, this dude looks like he's 55 years old running the football. And I know Shanahan is a complete knob when it comes to picking running backs, but there's no
right.
way he can stick with this guy the whole year. And RG3 sneaking the touchdowns. So and
right.
you could probably get, I mean, if you're in your shoes, would you trade Alfred Morris for Chris Johnson right now? Because I think I would.
I'm not sure. I mean, I actually have them both in my money league. So,
well, I guess then you can't make that trade.
More this week, but I agree with you. Shanahan, like, musical chairs over there and with the running backs. But I'm sort of just – I like to play the hot hand sometimes, and I'm not sure I would trade him this early.
Okay.
But I would agree. I mean, I don't think he's going to go long into the season and be consistent.
Maybe if it's not for Chris Johnson, maybe you can see if somebody really likes him and you can maybe get somebody somewhat elite. I don't know. But that's just on my point. I mean, it'd be kind of interesting to see going on, you know, down the line here, you know, which one of us was quote-unquote right, you know, because I can't see how he can be a productive back in this league, especially with this game being so much speed-based now. You know, worked for Brandon Jacobs for how many years, so. And finally, you know, I'm not going to take up your entire day. You're a busy man. What do you think about this matchup with the Bills? We're going to talk to Buffalo Ramblings a little bit later on here, but what's your view of this game?
Well, you know, the Browns have an interesting history with the Bills. You know, since 2007, we've got some close games. We've got some ugly games.
I was about to say, have any of them been a pretty game?
Right, right, exactly. C.J. Spiller, I think, is going to be the deciding factor here. Can the Browns slow him down? And it's something I think we can. The front seven, again, I've been impressed with. I think we can do it, but if he gets going, he's going to open up a passing game. We know we have weaknesses in secondary. And the Bills' passing game hasn't been any slouch this season. So.
Well, then you got Stevie Johnson. It's always kind of dangerous.
Right.
But I think David Nelson tore up his knee. He's out. Hopefully Sheldon Brown's back. Maybe he can slow down Stevie Johnson a little bit. We can focus all of our attention. I think the key is T.J. Ward. When T.J. Ward has been in, our defense has looked a whole lot better than when he's gone out. And Ray, I hate you so much, Ventrone walks in here and gives up big plays at every single turn.
Right.
If we could have T.J. Ward down there at the line of scrimmage helping out on Spiller, I think you're right. I don't think we stop him. I mean, C.J. Spiller's an elite talent. He's going to spring one or two. It's kind of like LeSean McCoy. He's going to get his yards at some point in time.
Yeah.
But if Ward's down there, we slow him down enough, all of a sudden we put Fitzgerald in those third and longs. I've never been a Fitzgerald fan. I think that was a horrible contract, and I think you can rattle him and make him make some stupid decisions with the football.
Yeah, and I've actually been surprised to hear a lot of Browns fans consider this like a lock win, just because, I mean, we have a history of beating the Bills, but I don't think it's going to be easy. I think we can win it, but I don't think it's going to be easy, and I've also heard it described as a must-win for this front office.
Mm.
I disagree with that in the sense that every game is a must-win. And if we lose, again, I'm not a moral victory kind of person, but if we lose close and we have sort of excuses, even though, again, I'm a no-excuse guy either, but if those kind of things are there to take, like, positives that we have to take away, what choice do we have? So
I like how you mentioned that, you know, that people are considering this a win, because I don't. But I will say this. I don't know if it's the talent that we have on the team or it's just the young talent, whatever it is. But I don't think there's a game on our schedule that is a complete, there's no way we win this game. Yeah, I mean, you look at that schedule, it is kind of daunting. But you know what? A, this is the NFL. You know, any given Sunday, my God, we beat the Saints one year when Colt McCoy threw for 8 yards. I don't think that's the exact number, but you know what I'm saying. You can beat anybody in this league, but we have young talent. If Richardson goes 8 for 200 yards in a game, or Whedon catches fire, which I think he could do if given time, and throws for 400, you can beat anybody in this league, and especially with the young talent we have, that's exciting.
Right. And, you know, the last two games have proven that we can compete with, like, Super Bowl contenders. So, anyway, if you were to ask me at the beginning of training camp, like, all right, the Browns are going to lose their first two preseason games, first two regular season games, is there any way that you would be okay with that? And I would have said absolutely not. But how do you make those look good? And I think that's what they've done. Like, they've actually – they're sort of turning me on this moral victory thing, even though, like, I'm hesitant. But they've looked as good as they can in losses.
And both sides of the football have looked good, you know? I mean,
right.
And neither one of them have – outside of the offense, who looked just god-awful in week one. I mean, let's be honest there. But I don't think the defense was god-awful in week two. You know, I think we got nicked up on a few plays, but that's okay. It's exciting to be good on at least both sides of the football. This isn't like when we were winning games, you know, 9-3 because we ran the ball 1,000 times. Yay, we won, but we still suck and we knew it. This is different, and I'm with you on this. I think it's exciting, and I'm looking forward to this Sunday, and I'm excited to punch the Bills in the face because I think it's going to be a tight game.
Yep, I do too.
John Stichcomb, lead writer of Dogs by Nature. Absolute blast to meet you, man. I'm glad I got you on here. Let Dogs by Nature hear your voice as well, because they're probably tired of hearing my voice.
Yep, nice to meet you as well. Thanks for having me on.
Now we talk to Mike Spann, your NFL referee. Thanks for taking the time out to join us here today. You've worked with some big-time crews in the NFL. We're talking with guys, at least the guys that we recognize on television. You know, you're one of those guys that, do you ever get recognized in the store where people look at you and they're like, I know that guy from somewhere, but they can't really place you?
Oh, it happens periodically, but obviously we're not on the screen as often as, you know, the white hat, the head referee.
Now, you're a line judge, and, you know, for those that don't know, that means you're the guy right there on the line of scrimmage in front of the coaches. You've got to have a massive thick skin, correct?
You develop a thick skin over a period of time, yes.
Now, do you have some sort of, like, working relationship with those coaches? I mean, is it kind of a give-and-take situation? Do you kind of just let them get it off their chest? Or is that a case-by-case basis?
It's a case-by-case. However, you know, I have a standard way in which I operate, and is that you know, it's all about communication. Officiating is all about communication and clarity. You know, there's realizing that there's lots of emotion involved, and coaches are emotional, and there's a lot at stake in every game, every play. So I try to kill them with kindness, be respectful, be receptive to their requests. If I don't know the answer or if they need clarity on something that occurred, I tell them that I'll get back to them, and I'm sure that I'm always sure to follow up and do get back to them. But from the get-go, from the beginning of the game, I tell them how I'm going to communicate with them, and I ask them I make a request of them as to how they could communicate with me so that I can get them the necessary information that they need. And, you know, most of the time they're very receptive, and I really haven't had problems with that because a lot of times it's you remain calm and all the emotion that's out on the field, the seven people that have to be calm are the officials, because we're the decision makers.
Talking with Mike Spanier, NFL referee, have you ever flagged a coach for screaming and stuff like that, or is that just kind of like a, we'll let it happen?
I believe I have. It's been so infrequent, I don't believe I have in the NFL. But the line, when they cross the line, when it has to do with profanity directed at you or another official on the field, you know, question your integrity, that usually results in some kind of a violation that would warrant a flag.
Now, your story is actually kind of cool. I did a little research here. you've been working at this a long time. I mean, you worked at this a long – give everyone else a little background on what it, your road to getting to an NFL referee.
Well, it takes a little while because I haven't missed a loop. I've jumped to every loop, meaning I've worked every level conceivable. Sometimes officials will jump a level, maybe perhaps because of the perception of how good they might be or the need at from a certain region or whatever. But yeah, I started out working City League high school, City League basketball while I was in college at St. Cloud State University, and it was actually made some money to go to school. Although I obviously had interest in it as I played in high school, and but moving forward, I after I graduated from college, I coached. I coached for 5-6 years, and always wanted to do some officiating. But then I went into administration, and of course, coaching and administration really didn't go hand in hand, and. So I met up with a friend that was involved in officiating and had been involved for quite some time, and he had a partner, and this started out, it was in basketball, who was about to retire, and this veteran official, John Leaser, who still is very active in officiating in central Minnesota and across the state, and also is an avid golfer and golf columnist in our local paper, took me under his wing, and you know, the rest is kind of history. He had already been in the Division III and Division II leagues, and I worked high school with him, and was able to work you know, regional and state tournaments, and then got into the college ranks along the way, and worked Division III and Division II. Worked Division II for quite some time in the North Central Conference, probably the best Division II conference in the nation at the time, and then got into the Big Ten, and worked 6 years in the Big Ten. And while in the Big Ten, I made an application. After I was in the Big Ten for 3 years, I made application to the NFL, and the NFL does an extensive job in scouting their officials. They have scouts at every major college game and some Division II games throughout the nation every Saturday. And they select their officials, and I was fortunate to be interviewed and selected. And part of their training ground at the time was to send their officials to NFL Europe, and I did some of that. I did 3 years of that, and then started in the NFL in 1999.
When you say you go to NFL Europe, I mean, there's worse gigs in the world, am I right? And did you live over there full time, or, you know, did you bounce back and forth?
No, we'd go over there twice a year. We'd work three games at a time. So we'd be over there for 10 to 12 days, and we'd go on a Thursday, work a game on Saturday and Sunday, and then work the following weekend, work either a Saturday, one game on a Saturday, or work another Saturday and a Sunday, and then come home. So, and we did that twice during the course of the NFL Europe season.
Regular season here with the NFL. What day do you leave home, and like, when do you get your assignment? Take us through what it is to be an NFL official here for the week leading up to a game.
Okay, I'll start with the preseason. We start out our season in July with a clinic, and it's a 4-day clinic in Dallas. Spend a lot of time with our own crews and working with our supervisors and position trainers, most of whom are former NFL officials. We have a proctored test on the rules and enforcements. We go to a training camp. We typically spend 3 to 4 days at a training camp, a different training camp each year. I think in the 13 years I've been in the league, I've been to 13 different training camps. We work with the teams, work their scrimmages, work in their position groups, answer their questions, and so on. So, and then we have our preseason. We typically work 4 preseason games. Preseason, we generally can go in the day of the game. We can arrive at the site at the day of the game and then go out the next morning. However, we then get our regular season. We typically get, we know 3 weeks in advance where we're going. So every week we get an additional week. So we're always three weeks ahead in terms of knowing where we're going. We leave on Saturday mornings. I'm assuming this is a Sunday game now. We leave on a Saturday morning, try to get to our site by early afternoon. We typically then have a 3 to 4, sometimes it goes a little longer, hour meeting where we review our training tapes from the previous week, which is a compilation of calls and enforcements and good and bad and areas that we need to strengthen. And then we also have another test that we need to do each week. And then we have dinner together, and on Sunday morning, with a 1 o'clock game, we're typically on the road to our game by 9 o'clock in the morning, because we have to be at the site by three and a half hours before the game. When we get to the game, I'm a line judge, so I'm also in charge of the official timing on the field. I go to what's called the TV truck, which is the production truck, whether it's Fox, NBC, ABC, ESPN. And get the correct time with them, because everything operates on off that time for the rest of the afternoon or evening. We dress. I go to the locker room and meet with the home coach, and there I have an opportunity to discuss what we talked about earlier in terms of how we're going to operate on the sideline. I get any concerns they have about the other team or any unusual plays that they might have themselves. We set our time so that we're all on the same timeline. And we get their captains and any other concerns they might have, and return to the locker room, and we go on the field 50 minutes before the game. We supervise the field, so to speak, and ensure that the field is properly lined and there are no hazards of any sort in the area. And then 2 minutes prior to the game, I go to the home team locker room and get their team and bring them out for the introductions.
That's the off-field stuff. On-field stuff, have you ever just been, maybe when you first started, have you ever been just kind of like awestruck by a player when you first see them?
Initially in the league, some of the size of some of the players is and speed along with the size is kind of, that can catch your attention in a hurry. They sometimes they're quite larger than what you might expect them as you see them on TV. But standing next to them and seeing them make plays that just when you think that it's not going to happen, it does happen. So the execution is unbelievable.
You guys are crazy when you guys go split up some of these fights between these guys. I mean, you got to have some sort of death wish, because some of these guys are just massive at this point in time.
Well, they're very respectful of the officials, and when they see the stripes and they listen, they know that they're going to cross the line if they shove an official or so on. So we just make our presence known.
In that aspect, at what point in time do the trash talk between the players, do you kind of tell them to chill out, or do you let that kind of just go because it's just kind of how the game is?
The players for the most part know each other, and there'll be some discussion with each other. When it gets to be more of a taunt, and unsporting-like, then we step in and offer a warning, assuming that it hasn't gone over the line. But for the most part, the players are respectful of each other. It's very competitive, and in the heat of battle, emotions arise. But once you're able to step between them, it typically settles down. And what you don't see on TV or see in a game is that they typically will pat each other and say, "Hey, sorry about that," and move on.
Yeah, that doesn't really get the TV ratings as much as them pushing each other.
Exactly.
Now, you make kind of an interesting point there. You've been in the league since 1999. You say the players get to know them, but at some point in time, you kind of start to get to know some of the players just a little bit, correct?
Oh, sure. I mean, it's a familiar face. I don't think they always know, especially the guys who are not the white hats by name, but they know who we are. It's always nice to, you know, be able to acknowledge them, and they acknowledge you, and they're obviously like any other relationship. They're more comfortable when they see somebody that's familiar to them.
And that's the thing. You've kind of earned your stripes, if you will, to avoid the cheesiest pun of all time there, that you've been in the league this long, and maybe they respect the call a little more when you make it like that.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, I think that's true at all levels, you know, high school. You know, you'll hear coaches say, "Now, who's this guy?" You know, and I've been fortunate to be on the receiving end of that, where a coach will come to me and they'll say, "Mike, who's this new guy? Where's he from?" You know, that kind of thing. And they're testing the waters with the new guys.
What is the greatest player that you have seen, as far as physical talent and just the person that kind of made you go, "Wow, that guy is amazing"?
Well, I can't narrow it to one. I can give you several. You know, perhaps as a running back, Robert Smith, former Viking running back, was absolutely amazing. His work ethic, his speed, his strength. And I was fortunate to work him when he was a senior at Ohio State also. So I kind of, you know, I followed him over the years, and to see him operate. Julius Peppers, a defensive end. Now I believe he's with the Bears. His speed and size, his ability to go from one side of the field to the other amazes me. You know, those two really stand out in my mind. I know I'm missing others because there are so many of them that just amaze you, you know, at all of the positions.
Take us back. You said that, you know, you worked in the Big Ten. What is the biggest difference from working, let's say, the Big Ten versus the NFL? Is it just size and speed?
Exactly. The speed and the speed of execution is amazing. I thought when I moved from one level to the next that, you know, it always, of course, increased. You know, I went from the Division II to Division I. I thought, wow, this is probably the best. And but the biggest gap or the biggest increase in speed, size, and execution was from Division I to the NFL.
Just for me, who have been to a practice and a game and seen stuff up close, you hit it right on the head. It's just, it's night and day. I mean, it's not like incremental. It's just a massive leap.
Yeah. In the NFL, there are guys, you know, who are number two and number three who are just waiting in the wings. And so the pressure to execute and to perform for that first stringer or that frontline guy is so great, and they're pushed immensely. And, you know, that's the one thing that there's not that big a drop-off sometimes in some of the players that come through the ranks.
What is your favorite town to work in? Because I don't want to say team or anything, if there's any sort of bias. But what is your favorite place to go to, and what is your least? There's got to just be a dump out there that you don't like going to.
Well, I have a pat answer for a favorite place to go, and that's any place warm.
Good point.
You know, and there are some other places that have the ambience is regardless of the weather, you can't beat it. And in terms of places that are not, I mean, I don't dread going there, but a lot of us are not real big fans of domes, especially the older domes. The
really?
New ones now are much more, and it's got nothing to do with anything other than that they're not as well lit, you know, that kind of thing. You don't necessarily, there's no wind factor. But, you know, every stadium in the NFL is tremendous. I mean, they're all state-of-the-art for the most part.
Now, I know what the politically correct answer to this is, but do you have, like, a little bit of sense of pride when a coach challenges one of your rulings and it's upheld? I mean, do you just kind of maybe puff out the chest a little bit and be like, "I told you guys"?
Well, I don't look at it as a win-lose thing. I don't look at the coaches, you know, "Well, why did you challenge that kind of thing? And I proved something to you." I do look at it, you know, selfishly, and I think most of us do, is that we made the right call. you know, and I think you know, it does. It's encouraging. It helps your confidence, especially if it's something that you know, we should have gotten right anyway. What's disheartening is if you a call is overturned and you look at it and say, "Wow, how did I miss that?" But I've had calls overturned where the white hat came out and said to me, "Mike, there's no way that you could have seen that," and the league typically agrees with that. And you know, and I think that's true in most cases. Seldom are they overturned. I think the NFL has statistics on it. I think it's up around 98% of the calls are upheld.
And speaking of the instant replay officials, are you ever a little jealous that they just kind of get to sit up there and watch TV all game?
Oh, no, they have a tough job because especially when it comes to inside of 2 minutes and on scoring plays, now that they have to, and now it's also every turnover. So it's their job, you know, coaches can't challenge, so it's their job upstairs to determine whether or not they – the referee should be looking at this. So, you know, they have an awesome responsibility. And they have to be, every play, they need to be on top of it because they never know when it's going to be challenged. So they need to have all the angles set and ready to go because the white hat, the referee, only has so many seconds under the hood to look at plays. And the instant replay guy has to have everything all set for them by the time they put their head under the hood. So, no, I think they're all, except one or two now, are all former NFL on-field officials, and they do a great job.
One last question here before I let you go. I've taken up enough of your time. Let's say you work a Thursday night game or a Sunday night game, and you get home and Monday Night Football's on. Can you turn that on with, you know, taking the referee hat off? Or is it just, you know, you're too involved and you're looking for the stuff? Or can you just sit back and enjoy it?
No, I sit back and watch the officials. I put myself in the line judge spot, and I officiate almost every play.
Oh, so it's almost kind of like a scouting kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a good learning tool. I mean, it's just, you know, in football officiating, as many repetitions as you can see, you know, many snaps as you can see, the more you can learn, you can scout some tendencies, obviously. But I don't pay much attention to that. I just officiate the game as I sit in my living room.
Mike, thanks for taking the time of joining us. And up next, we talk about the Browns and the Bills. Dogs by Nature is joined by Brian Galliford from Buffalo Rumblings. Appreciate you taking the time out here to join us today.
My pleasure.
So, C.J. Spiller, superstar. Who knew, huh?
You know, it's looking like he may actually be worthy of that title. He has been amazing these first couple of weeks.
As a Bills fan, I mean, do you kind of see this coming? I mean, with Fred Jackson being kind of the guy there, what's going to happen when he comes back?
You know, we did sort of see a better Spiller coming. We saw a lot of good play from him in the last half dozen games of last season, but I mean, we didn't expect Marshall Faulk out of the kid. You know, he's been unbelievable, and you know, it's helped that Jackson has been out of the lineup because he would not be getting the sheer number of touches that he is at the moment if Jackson were healthy. And you know, but Spiller's playing so well at this point that it's hard to envision Jackson taking back lead back carries when he gets back into the lineup. Spiller's the best running back in the NFL right now. And, you know, it'll be a good problem to have when both are healthy, but Spiller's the guy, I think.
I saw a stat, I think it was Adam Schefter had it, that C.J. Spiller is the first back since Jim Brown to average 10 yards a carry over his first two games. That's just unreal.
Yeah, it's been unbelievable. He has a slew of carries over 20 yards. A carry of 56 yards in the first game and another of 49. He's had several long runs that could have been longer had he played things right. He, you know, he's getting great blocking first and foremost from an up-and-coming young offensive line, and he's really just coming into his own as a player.
let's look ahead to this weekend. Obviously, you know, whatever happens after this weekend, yeah, good for you. We, as Browns fans, don't really care. Football between the Bills and the Browns have been just hideous football games, at least, I don't know, in the last, what, 7 years or so? I can remember the Eric Mangini game.
I remember an 8-0 barn burner in your place, and then through a blizzard, and there was a 6-3 game in Buffalo between Dick Geron and Eric Mangini. I was at that game. That was the single worst football game I've ever been to in my life. It was horrendous.
Looking ahead to this weekend, at least, I think it may be, I don't want to jinx it, but I don't know, I don't want to say shootout, but I think there's going to be a lot more points scored than 8, that's for sure.
Oh, gosh, I hope so. That would be lovely, 8 or 9. Yeah, I do think there is a possibility of that happening. Buffalo's offense is humming along pretty good at the moment, and, you know, I watched the Browns-Bengals game from last weekend online, and I was pretty impressed by what the Browns did offensively, particularly with how well Brandon Whedon played against a defense that I expected to be pretty good. I think Cincinnati's going to be a pretty good team. And
same here.
Kind of did whatever he wanted against them.
What's been the early returns here on Mario Williams so far?
He has one fumble recovery, and then he hasn't done much more statistically. The defensive line has just been so-so the first couple of weeks, you know, despite all of the major press that they got this offseason. The one player who has been flat-out elite over the first two games is Kyle Williams, which isn't surprising to anyone who's ever seen Kyle Williams play. The guy's a monster. But as for Williams, he's opening things up for the other guys, as we kind of expected he would, just because teams are throwing 2 and 3 guys his way. But, you know, against a good offensive line, he'll be handled usually by 1 or 2 guys. He's a guy that's going to do more just by being on the field than he will in the stats column.
What about your linebackers core and your defensive backfield? I know you guys spent a top 10 pick on a cornerback out of South Carolina this year. What's been the returns on him?
Gilmore has been, again, just so-so the first couple of weeks. He was pretty bad along with the entire defensive backfield against the Jets. Mark Sanchez just ripped them to shreds in week one. The group was much better against Kansas City. I think that had a lot more to do with Kansas City playing like complete garbage and Matt Cassel being a weird, higher-paid version of Trent Edwards. it was a bad game, but they played much better. They were much more physical and played a lot more press coverage. They still struggle with the balls in the air, but they made strides, and that's, I guess, all we can ask for from such a young group. Gilmore, he has all the athletic potential in the world, and he's got a good demeanor. I think he'll be a good cornerback in time, but right now he's definitely a guy that can be exploited.
What Bills team are the Browns going to see on Sunday? Is it the team that got rolled by the Jets or the team that just straight-up housed the Chiefs?
It's probably going to be somewhere in between. That's a great question. One of the interesting things for this game about the Bills is, you know, there's two things, actually. They have lost 8 games in a row on the road, and they have been blown out in 5 of them, just completely obliterated. And they come into this game, you know, having not really played a complete 4-quarter football game yet. They were blown out, and they blew the Chiefs out. Whereas the Browns, you know, they're at home, so that's a big advantage for them against a team like Buffalo in the first place. And they have played 2 very excellent football games, very competitive football games against 2 quality opponents. And, you know, they've lost by a combined total of 8 points. This is an interesting matchup for Buffalo just because they have those 2 sort of hurdles to clear before they can think about really, you know, beating a team that most people expect them to beat.
In my shoes as a Browns fan, when you guys signed a monster contract with Ryan Fitzpatrick, I kind of thought, what the hell are you guys thinking? And then he played well for a little bit, and then it's kind of been, I don't want to say return to earth, but what do the Bills fans kind of think about Ryan Fitzpatrick and that contract?
I think, you know, a lot of us kind of just grinned and bared it when he was signed to that deal, because he was playing extremely well at the point when he did sign the deal, and, you know, that's just sort of the going rate for a quarterback when you sign him to a long-term deal. That's just what they had to pay him. And obviously he has not played well since then. I think he's thrown 19 interceptions since that time, and I think he's probably up to 15 touchdowns at this point. He's been up and down, mostly down. He had a pretty good game last week, made some bad throws, but also was clean and made a lot of good decisions and didn't make any bad ones. He's just, if they can get that out of Fitzpatrick, a guy who can, you know, move the offense, score touchdowns, and do it without putting up just ridiculous interception totals like he did last year and in week one, they will be a pretty good offense. And it, you know, that has a lot to do with Chan Gailey. You know, he's one of the better offensive minds in the league. And he's, you know, Fitzpatrick is a quarterback that Gailey can work with, and that's probably the best thing we could say about him at this point.
David Nelson tore up his knee. Is it all on Stevie Johnson on the outside, or is there another weapon out there?
I mean, even before that, it was pretty much all on Stevie Johnson. He's really the one outside threat they have. Losing Nelson hurts because he was a very good safety valve-type target. The Bills use him a lot like the Patriots use Aaron Hernandez or any of these other tight ends are used. He's just a huge guy, very long life guy who can make plays out of the slot. He's not going to give you much after the catch, and that's just what Nelson is. A lot of that responsibility is now falling to Scott Chandler, the tight end, who has had a couple of really good games, you know, quietly put up some good numbers in these first couple of weeks. He's really the only safety valve target, and then it's Johnson. And then they're kind of waiting for either one of Donald Jones or T.J. Graham, the rookie out of North Carolina State, to step up. And until then, they're going to use their backs, Spiller predominantly, as a receiving threat.
One last question here before I let you flip the tables here and ask me some questions. Special teams has kind of been a sore spot for the Browns, you know, the best year and a half or so. What can the Bills do to take advantage of that? Are there any electric players you got going on that side of the ball?
You know, the one guy that you need to be aware of is Leotis McKelvin. He's garbage, complete garbage as a cornerback, but he's, when he's on and in the right frame of mind, he is one of the best punt returners in the league. He had an 88-yard touchdown last week. He's a guy that you need to watch out for on that side of the ball. And, you know, Buffalo's exploitable there, too. Jeremy Curley had a punt return for a touchdown in week one. So, you know, again, it's the boomer bust nature. The Bills are an inconsistent team at this point, and that holds true for their special teams as well.
Just so I'm sure, you believe that McKelvin is garbage as a cornerback, correct?
As a cornerback, yeah. He has been atrocious.
You know, I appreciate you taking the time out here to answer some questions for us. Here at Dogs by Nature, we always like to answer any questions that the opponent has for us as well. So what you got for me?
Oh, that's fun, sure. I have a lot of familiarity, as do all Bills fans, with the one and only Dick Geron. And, you know, I was pretty impressed with what he did against Philadelphia, the turnover half of the Eagles in week one. And they did, you know, they regressed a little bit last week against a good Cincinnati offense. What are Browns fans thinking about Geron and the defense he's built over the last couple of years?
Absolutely love it. I mean, he's gotten a huge boost from the talent that Tom Heckert has gone ahead and drafted and given him. But you know what? It's a defense that has been completely rebuilt in about two and a half, three years, whatever you want to call it. We were top five defense last year in a lot of statistical categories, and a lot of people thought that was fool's gold, if you will. But the defensive line has been out of their mind this year, and Geron's done a nice job keeping everybody fresh. We rotate in a lot of young kids, and we're still without Phil Taylor, our first-round pick from last year, who tore a pec, and he'll be out until the middle of this year. So it's very encouraging. I will say one thing, though. Joe Hayden, obviously out with a suspension. He's going to be missing three more games. And Sheldon Brown is nicked up. He was back at practice today, which is a good thing. Up front, a little nicked up. Billy Wynn left last week's game with concussion. He was limited today in practice. But either way, I think this Browns defense is really coming around. Very young, got some good playmakers. Can still be taken advantage of on the outside on linebackers. That really kind of scares me with Spiller in that aspect. But Geron has been fantastic, and hopefully he never wants to be a head coach again.
Yeah, you know, I'm not surprised that you say that. He does have some good talent there. I always thought, you know, I actually had the opportunity to meet him a couple years ago. He is a really, really bright guy. You can tell that he loves the game, and he really knows what he's doing. And I'm not surprised at all that he's turned your defense around in a very short amount of time.
Sometimes guys are just better coordinators than coaches. I mean, it sounds rude to say that kind of thing, but you know what? Look at it. Wade Phillips is a genius. He sucks as a head coach. You know, it's just, that's how it works out
sometimes. And we're wondering the same thing about Chan Gailey right now. The guy can clearly coach an offense, but he's also 11-23 as a head coach in Buffalo. So we'll see how that pans out for him.
I'm thinking this game's going to be a shootout. I don't want to be held to it, but if we can protect Whedon enough, I think he's going to stretch that defense and Richardson will do some damage underneath and we can get this thing going.
I wouldn't doubt it. I think there's a very good chance that Cleveland can pull off this win. Buffalo is not, you know, everyone's talking about them being a playoff team, and that's clearly the goal. And if they want to be a playoff team, I think a game against Cleveland, with absolutely no disrespect meant, that's a game that they should win.
Agreed.
That's it. If they're going to be a playoff team, they have to be Cleveland, period. But this is not a playoff team yet because of their incredible inconsistency. And if they want to take that next step, they need to handle their business on the road.
And you know what? The Browns played, you know, the Eagles, who may be the best team in the NFL if they can ever stop turning the ball over, and the Bengals, who were a playoff team last year, really well. So I think it's going to be a nice barometer for the Browns as well. You know, are we better than the Bills in that kind of hierarchy? Where do we fit in? And it'll be kind of nice to get our feet settled before we move on throughout the stadium, because we got the Ravens next week on a short week, so... It's definitely going to be a...
And we have the Patriots. This is like the setup game for Tuesday's division game.
So, all right, all that being said, let's have your prediction. Who do you think wins and what's the score?
I do think the Bills will win. I haven't picked them in either of the first 2 weeks, and I think Bills fans would flay me alive if I didn't pick them this week. But I think it'll be a close game. I think it'll be a bit high scoring like you suggest. I'll take the Bills 27-23.
All right, I'm going to go with the Browns 31-30 on a last-second Phil Dawson field goal, just because field goals are kind of what we do.
And because Phil Dawson has killed the Bills before. That would not surprise me at all.
That's true. Well, Brian, thanks for taking the time out to joining us. Head over to BuffaloRumblings.com. Talk to them. Very cool website. I've checked it out. They even have their own podcast, so hopefully we can kind of hold a little candle to them in that aspect. So, Brian, I appreciate you taking the time out today and helping us out here.
Thanks very much. Good luck this weekend.
Well, that's all we got for this episode of the Dogcast. Hopefully we'll have something next week when we play the Ravens. I have no idea who we're going to talk to there yet. As always, keep all your ideas coming. Let us know in the comments of what you would like to hear, what you like, what you don't like, anything like that, other than me, of course. Don't tell me that you don't like me, because I'll cry. I'm Matt Wood. This has been another episode of the Dogcast. Go Browns!